Hey, everybody, welcome to Code Pen Radio, episode 424, a palindrome number. Incredible. Yes.
We're gonna,
I got Steven here, of course. Hey, Steven.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah, this is like one that we like had jotted down. Of course, we have a document that we keep all of our best podcast ideas in, of things that matter to us or we think about and talk about and work on for a while and then ship. And then we'll be like, oh, yeah, we should do a podcast on that eventually. This one is like one that we did a while ago, but we're going to do the podcast, dang it, because that's what we do around here. And it's kind of a niche idea that, you know, you'd never realize we did anything for. It's kind of one of those software things that like the better we do about it, the less you'll notice it. I guess is a way to think about it.
So many of those things throughout the new editor, you know, all the little feels throughout it that make it mm-hmm. snappy and fun to use.
Yeah. You know what? It's a kind of a reason to go into front end a little bit is because, you know, the things you notice you work on sometimes do get noticed. If you're a designer, oh my gosh, people notice the heck out of your design. But then if you're a back end developer, it's a lot of times, you know, you do this big database migration or something and you get absolutely nothing. You know, Alex likes to joke about it at CodePen. He gets no backslaps for the work he gets.
You know. Yeah. If you get no feedback, that's good feedback for DevOps.
Feedback is the best. Yeah. The best. It works out in pay scale usually across the industry though, you know. If you get backslaps, you also get less money. So that's how that works. But here's what it is before we get too far on it. Is that we're trying to, you know, the 2.0 editor supports everything that it supported before, but we want you to be, especially as we move on and add more and more blocks, we have this idea for adding base blocks. Base blocks are going to be things like, I don't know, this hasn't even shipped yet, so it feels dangerous, but things like 11D and Astro and stuff like site building frameworks, which of course we're worked on the whole time, but are not at this moment available to use in the editor. But of course, you're going to have lots more files. It's not going to be like a 3-file setup in that case. It's going to be dozens or many more than that even of files. And of course, we're testing like how many, you know, could there be? You know, let's say you had hundreds of blog posts and each blog post had 2 images in it and all this, like lots of them. Well, that's, you know, it's going to depend on your pro plan because our pro plans do have the number of files limits is how that's going on. But if we're going to say we support that, we need to say that we need to manage that on the server side, you know, make sure that it's fast and we're handling it well and all this, and handle it on the client side as well. You know, can you have 300 files open? Can you have 300 files in the files panel? And that's the one that we're talking about the most here because that one was tricky. You probably won't have 300 files open. That's would be
not.
Rough.
Yeah.
No. Nobody does
it,
that.
It would probably work depending on your browser and your machine, but
yeah, cuz we, you know, don't we do, isn't there some like React
we have
like,
optimizations in place. If a tab isn't in focus, then it shouldn't be using up as much resources. We'll kind of touch on some of
right,
that.
Right. It's like frozen or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we do that. But if you open the files panel, it's totally reasonable that you'd see hundreds of files, especially if you have all your folders open, all your blog posts are in one folder, that kind of thing. So that's a bigger problem. You know, that's like growth that just, it's not going away. It's not like you see 300 files sometimes. You're going to see 300 files most of the time when you're in a pen, and that leads to heavy DOM situation, especially because it's not just like a div that's gray or something. It's a div that has a variety of click handlers on it, and it has SVG inside of it, and it has all kinds of like interactive things that it can do. They're like drop. If it's a folder, it's like a drop target. They're draggable. These things are like pretty seriously interactive horizontal rectangles.
Plus all the data subscriptions, almost everyone has hooks that's going to be checking for like, is this file saved or does it have unsaved changes? And mm-hmm. all those kinds of things that if you've got 300 files listed out, that's a lot that's updating almost every time your pin is changing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure this isn't even the full list. There's, you know, there's collab too and mm-hmm. all this stuff. So, okay. We're doing that. It's also one of those things where like, if you were just going to use VS Code in the browser, you just like get that for free. But as we've talked about in many shows, we don't. We're not VS Code in the browser. We coded this dang thing from scratch. So this is something we need to work on ourselves. And we didn't at first, right? We just like made the components as we would want to make them, like that use the hooks, that look how they look, they nest how they nest, they just do all this stuff, and then waited for the problem to come up. We probably had in mind, like, maybe this is a little much to render 300 of these particular components, but we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. And then, you know, then we came to the bridge, essentially.
Well, and the complexity of them grew over time as we added in the collab features and, you know, just little niceties with it all. So over time, we could feel the performance strains as we were stress testing things with 300 files and stuff.
Yeah, and imagine, I mean, even just visually, 300 can't fit up and down. So we'd be scrolling, and scrolling is always a fun little stress test for the browser. You know, like, can you handle it? You know, how's that? We need that buttery smooth scrolling, so you better handle it. But we didn't prematurely optimize it, which was probably smart. You know, don't get into optimizing territory until you need to. And we did it right when we needed to, maybe just slightly before. Yeah, nailed it, I'd say. And so one of the things, a word that might come up when you think about this kind of thing is virtualization, meaning like you're not actually showing them all the time.
Right. Know? It's not fully rendered out in the DOM. Basically, only what's visible in the viewport is actually rendered. And then there's a whole bunch of complex logic for managing like what's visible and where you are in the scroll list and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, right. But the things that need to know about the whole list do know about the whole list, but the DOM itself, they're not necessarily there, which is fine. Right. So if you have like a search functionality like we do, it's still searching the complete list of the 300 or whatever it is, but it's not necessarily showing or rendering all of them. That's fine. And React's actually like kind of good at that. Generally, or at least there's plugins and stuff to work on that. So we could have gone that way. Did we go that way? I don't even. I tested a few out.
Like I think React VTree is one of the common ones. But overall, like the complexity of the implementations plus like the size of the libraries just for the virtualization were just too high. It wasn't worthwhile to have that integration.
Mm-hmm. And you're watching that. We'll do a podcast about it soon, but we're off the heels of doing a bunch of server-side rendering work in which that our goal is to make this new editor, despite how much more stuff it can do and support and all that, is actually smaller and more efficient than the old even pen editor was, which is quite an impressive feat. Yeah, no, I can't actually. I can't believe it. It's unbelievable to me. but I think that's a result of caring about stuff like this. Because you can't just be like, oh, this little library is 250K. And you're like, well, it solves a problem though, so let's just use it. We'd be like, no, you know, that's just crazy. For something that's like not absolutely paramount to it. Like Code Mirror is so important that we use it. It's not actually a terrible offender, I don't think. I mean, I'm sure it's a decent size of the bundle, but it's not like absolutely nuts big.
It's the best option out there in terms of features and file size,
and
especially with Code Mirror 6, the way that it packages everything out, loads a little bit more efficiently.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So that, like, is okay. And even if it was a little heavier, I'm glad that it's not, but we probably would have continued to choose it because it's so important. But when things are like, it's a virtualization library, you're like, ugh, you know? I just saw one, and it was just because I think I saw it on Instagram of all places, and it was Alex Sexton, who's, you know, I don't know, Austin JavaScript. I've known him forever. Then he was at Stripe for a while. Now he's at some, I don't know, specialty software shop that I'd never heard of. I don't know. But they worked on and dropped a URL called trees.software. I think that's just a URL just for this open, I think it's open source. Thing that's just for this. It's kind of like the sidebar of VS Code, but just as an independent software product kind of thing. And it looks much nicer. It's like very nice. Clearly they want, you know, people to use this kind of thing when they're making software like we're using. But it's in that category where like, dang, this is nice. It's got all the stuff we want and it's 250K, you know, and you're like, little big scheme. So that's okay. Like, I don't know. I don't know what would have happened if that existed right when we needed it, but it's too late now because
we would have at least tried it, you know?
And, yeah, for sure.
Maybe it would have balanced out with all the custom components and everything that we have for it. But, you know, it's something you got to dig into. But we made these kind of choices over and over again with stuff like resizable panels, with tabs, with drag and drop. Like, there's so many libraries out there for these things. But they're either just not the right fit. They didn't do exactly what we need, what people expect CodePen to do, or the file size was just way too high. So we ended up implementing our own version of all of those.
Most
things.
Of this stuff.
Yeah.
Right. And so this one, I don't know, I guess what we did do, because we just haven't even said the word yet, is use Intersection Observer for a lot of this stuff. God, no wonder. I was just on a call with Robert, and I kept using Intersection Observer as an example of something. And I was like, why is that stuck in my mind? It's like, oh, yeah, because I have a podcast in 5 minutes where we're going to talk about Intersection Observer the whole time.
It's such a great API.
Not the whole time, apparently. Yeah. But it's a very interesting API, maybe used a little less now that, there's some, I remember it being used a lot for like, I'm going to watch and see if this IMG tag in HTML is like anywhere close to being visible. And then I'm going to like swap out the source for a high res image or something. The idea being to improve performance. One of the things you can do with Intersection Observer is like, is this rectangle on the page currently visible or close to being visible, or like, what's the story there? It can do other stuff too. But that's kind of one of the main use cases for it. And that's how we're using it, I think, is like, okay, there's 300 files. How many of them can you see right now? And if you can't see it, then what decisions are we making? And I don't even remember. That was your kind of territory.
Right. So Intersection Observer, it's basically just watching like an element and checking to see if it's in the viewport. So like scroll triggered animations are a really good use case for it. And you know, lazy loading kind of stuff as well. But in this case, what we're doing is we have a Intersection Observer set up kind of as like a parent. And then the children that are added to it get added to that observation list. Intersection Observer is weird. Like, you don't look at an individual item. You look, you like have to add items to that observer.
You make an observer and then you add items for the observer to observe.
Right. Well, so I tested it multiple ways. Like if each element itself has its own Intersection Observer, the performance of that was actually terrible. But if you have one Intersection Observer that's watching 300 items, the performance was great. Fine. So we set up a whole like React context setup for that, so that items could be added to one observer. And then when the items are outside of the viewport, we use something called React Freeze. And this is a super clever, like maybe 500 byte React library that basically uses... It's ridiculously small.
Because I feel like we use it all the time. We freeze other stuff too, don't we?
591 bytes without without minification.
We're like your biggest fans, React Freeze people. We're freezing everything around here,
right? So we use this for like our tab handling. We use this for all kinds of stuff. But basically,
like the panels that aren't open are froze, aren't they? And
right. Because one of the great things it does is it preserves the DOM. But it basically kills the like React side of it, where so it's not like actively being managed. The hooks and everything aren't still subscribed. It basically pauses that. It uses under the hood, it's using React Suspense just wrapped around whatever it is you're rendering, and then if you pass a freeze attribute to it, it basically just returns an infinite promise so that React Suspense kicks in and you can render like a fallback or whatever. But that, that basically just allows us to kill it without actually removing the component and losing like scroll state or like form inputs, like all that kind of stuff is preserved when you do this this kind of approach.
Oh yeah, it's so great. It was really, it solved all kinds of weird stuff for us. Like, you know, you're scrolled down in the files panel and you switch to another panel real quick and come back. It would be obnoxious to have it fully re-render and be scrolled to the top. You'd be like, why?
Yeah. Yeah. Silly. But at the same time, like you don't want that files tab just, or that files panel open in the background, constantly updating, even if you're not using it like that. That doesn't make sense either. So this this was a great solution for keeping performance while keeping the state of everything without us having to manually track all the individual state.
Yeah.
I remember looking into that, like just how complex it would be for us to remember the scroll position for each panel, remember like, you know, what's selected or like if they were on inputs.
Sure, we considered that. That sounds like us to be like, well, let's just save every bit of data in the universe into a weird location.
Thankfully, we didn't.
I know. Even though we should do more. So we don't virtualize it. If you got 300 things, there's 300 things in there, but a lot of them are frozen, meaning they're behave to the browser like it's just basically an empty div. It's like use hardly nothing, right?
Right. And so what that does is that keeps the scroll as like a real scroll. You know, the elements are taking up the right amount of space. And so you're getting the actual native browser scroll instead of trying to listen to scroll events and all that kind of stuff. And then whenever the element actually comes into view, we unfreeze it. And there's just like a slight little fade animation that we do just so that it feels feels a little more natural instead of things popping in and out.
So actual native browser scrolling is still butter smooth. Just you can just whip it and it'll just go, which is great. And they fade in, which is actually cool looking, but also is like, while it's fading, it's like kind of like rehydrating or whatever. It's also kind of like doing something useful too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. Anyway. Yeah. I remember being very pleased with that solution, especially because it's done ahead of time, you know, like now it's done.
Right.
Now we don't need to worry about it. Now, before we're, you know, having people making too many pens with hundreds and hundreds of files in them, which we very much hope that you do, but I want to be ready for you when you do it. Not
yes.
Like, oh, I tried doing it and it sucked. Like, that's like a bad business move, kind of, isn't it? Like, how, are you ever going to do it again? You know, like I wouldn't.
Right. That's your power user. Like, that's the one you want to hang on to. So optimizing for that is very wise.
Yeah. Yeah. First impressions and all that. Pretty cool. So is that the only technology that's involved here? It's just a React kind of contexty thing that has one intersection observer and it uses React Freeze on the things that it doesn't see. So not a terribly amazing amount of code, really.
Right. Yeah. Overall, it's probably less than 300 lines of code, including React Freeze. And so it works really efficiently. It works reliably. Browser support for intersection observer is like 100%. For years
I
now.
I love that if it's still in the DOM, it means like find on page still works and all this. It's making me think like, man, were virtual lists like maybe a little much? But maybe not. I mean, maybe if it's like the DOM stuff is heavier than ours is, although ours is not terribly light, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's still use cases for the virtualization, like tables and things like that. I think are particularly well served by it. But for our use case, this made a lot of sense and just worked really easily. Like it wasn't overly complex to implement. It was mostly just trying to find the solution.
Yeah,
I can't remember if we came up with it or if there was like a Stack Overflow or something that I came across that gave us the idea, but
yeah,
either way.
I don't remember either, but I do remember it being like a pretty satisfying thing to come across as a solution. Cause it was like, it went from a lot of complexity and weight to none. It's better.
Yeah.
It's like better in all the ways. Because a lot of times in programming, it's everything's a compromise. You know, you're like, well, we'll do it this way, but we'll lose this. And it's like, oh, we'll incur a bunch of weight, but it'll work how we want it to. In this case, it was like, oh, wait, but it's better in all the ways. Yay. Mm-hmm.
That's a win.
All right. Well, that's pretty cool. I guess we'll keep it as a short one today. Thanks, Stephen. We'll see you again in the future as there's some other interesting stuff to talk about.
So much.
Forever. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.